Since I began representing victims of sexual abuse, I've come to believe that for every one reported case of sexual abuse, there must be 4 to 5 instances of sexual assault that go unreported. This is purely anecdotal, but I believe it's accurate based on how many stories of sexual assault I've heard from friends, family members, and people I come across within the legal profession and outside of it. I'm attorney Nate Babram, a partner and personal injury attorney to InjuredCT.com, the injury litigation division of Aton Law Partners. I've represented victims of sexual abuse for nearly my entire career. These victims have ranged from toddlers to seniors, men and women from across the racial, economic, and social spectrum. Sexual abuse survivors should feel empowered to take on their abusers and know that there are many good attorneys in Connecticut that can help navigate you through these difficult cases. So I am introducing a short 3-part series on sexual assault cases in Connecticut to help shed some light on the process that victims of sexual assault go through when contemplating and bringing civil claims against their abusers and some of the issues they face. Let's talk about investigating sexual assault claims. Investigating sexual assault claims. Whenever I receive a new client with claims of sexual abuse, I immediately begin the process of investigating the claims. Unfortunately, not every person is truthful about their experience with sexual assault, and I have seen this many times as a criminal defense attorney. Unfortunately, every false claim of sexual abuse does tremendous damage to every true claim. In my opinion, this is one of the most significant reasons why sexual abuse claims go unreported. Obviously, many victims are concerned they simply won't be believed. More than that, however, many people connected with the abuser take it upon themselves to attempt to persuade the victim that what happened to them either wasn't abuse, was taken out of context, or plead with them that reporting the abuse will be devastating personally and professionally to the abuser. Suddenly, the victim is left with what is perceived as a terrible choice. Report abuse and hope that it doesn't happen again, or save familial relationships and friendships by staying quiet. Oftentimes, men are afraid to report abuse, especially when they were abused as kids by older men, because they do not want to be perceived as a victim in the first place. Oftentimes, men believe that others will believe that they themselves are abusers, based on the awful stereotype that we all know. How this damaging trope has become popular is heartbreaking, and it's prevented men from coming forward as victims of sexual abuse. In my experience, in fact, those who have been abused are the most concerned about the health and well-being of children because they have firsthand experience on the consequences of childhood sexual abuse. I often wonder how many men were abused as kids by other men but are afraid to come forward out of fear of what might be said about them. For women, the reluctance to come forward is obvious. They are much less likely to be believed. When the sexual abuse occurs when they are children or as a teen, they tend to face significant pressure to not come forward and blow the whistle on a male family member or community members perpetrating the abuse. So when a serial victim of child sexual abuse comes forward, it is oftentimes years or even decades after the abuse has ended. Usually the abuser has died or the victim has physically distanced themselves from the family unit that has permitted the abuse to occur by refusing to believe that it happened in the first place. The prolonged length of time between the abuse and the investigation could add some complexity to the process of bringing a claim. But a good investigation and faith that the person investigating believes you is an important and crucial first step. I have handled really terrible sexual assault and abuse cases, from toddlers to seniors who were abused as children. I can say that I have seen with my own eyes a look of relief on one's face when they finally talk to someone who believes what they say. When I begin to investigate a case, I oftentimes will utilize a private investigator. We start with the names and other information that my client can remember, generally the who, the what, the where, the when, and the how. If the abuse happened decades ago, then we attempt to track down the whereabouts of witnesses. My client may sometimes have just a first name or a town, and we start there. Our job is to find helpful information that may corroborate not necessarily the abuse, which happens when no one is around, but the dates and the events that form the part of the story. Did the victim tell anyone about it at the time? If so, can I find the person to corroborate that? If the victim did not tell anyone, then perhaps I can corroborate another detail, such as where the abuse occurred. Sometimes victims of sexual abuse do not even tell their medical providers, but getting medical records from the time period, even decades old if possible, can help demonstrate that clearly some significant emotional or physical trauma occurred. Using those medical records to show that the abuse occurred at a time when the child began to suffer mental health issues is a clear signal that some traumatic event has occurred. Many times, those mental health issues are misunderstood, as emanating from some other cause, or simply lead to the conclusion that the victim is a bad kid. I've been able to get decades-old medical records from facilities that have been shut down. Those records can be extremely helpful in providing support for a victim's claims. So when a person may ask, why didn't you tell anyone at the time? We can point to the medical records and say, they may not have told anyone at the time exactly what happened, but they told people and medical providers about what they were experiencing both physically and emotionally, and that was a clear sign of trauma. Of course, especially in the case of priest or church cases, Boy Scout cases, or school cases, our investigation often leads to additional victims. Many times, someone in a position of power who commits abuse doesn't simply prey on one victim. They are serial offenders. Victims often begin to feel more empowered when they realize they are not the only ones. Sometimes they feel vindicated and believed. For this reason, we often conduct an extensive investigation on the alleged perpetrator too. When we have enough reason to do so, we often contact associates, prior colleagues, family members. We figure out where they work, their criminal history, where they lived. In a church sex abuse case, oftentimes the abusers will have been sent to various different parishes. Once a complaint or a claim pops up, we attempt and are often successfully able to determine each place that person worked or was stationed. When we take a sexual abuse case, we ask all the questions we know someone who doesn't believe the victim will ask. This helps develop helpful evidence and better understand what issues another person, like a defense attorney, may point to try to diminish our client's claims. Next, I'll discuss the process of bringing a civil claim for childhood sexual abuse or sexual assault in Connecticut.